Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Hello, beautiful people. Debbie here. And today on the show, I will be speaking with author, keynote speaker, clairvoyant, astrologer, and mysteries expert, Tricia McCannon. We're going to be talking about awakening the divine, a lot of conversations with her on mysticism, healing, and hidden histories. I'm excited for this one, and thanks for being with us today. Dare to Dream podcast won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, the COVR Award for Best Podcast, Welp Magazine named Dare to Dream, one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to, and its high ranking on Apple Podcasts. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane Hear and Access Consciousness. They do energy work out into the world. If you want to become a facilitator or take one of their classes, go to Dr. Dane, H-E-E-R, hear.com. And the question is, do you want to know what your galactic ancestry is? This is like the new ancestry.com or 123. I mean, I always thought the secret was more in the galaxy. So I've got the information for you. You can unlock your cosmic potential. And this is a free gift from me to you. It's a starseed video and report. And you can explore over 19 different starseeds. It's captivating material, it's detailed, and I say do not miss this chance to connect with your star lineage. You can go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. It's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. Well, my guest coming up on the show today, we are both going to be at the February 2025 Conscious Life Expo. I will be giving out a link to that so you can get your tickets, and it will be in the show notes. So I'm going to ask you to refer there after the show. My guest today is Tricia McCannon, spiritual mystic, historian, and symbologist who's been a headliner in Europe and America for over 2 decades. Initiated into many ancient paths of wisdom, she's appeared on over 175 radio shows. She's the author of 5 acclaimed books, and Ms. McCannon speaks on a variety of subjects from the lost years of Jesus to the quest for the philosopher's stone, Egyptian mysteries to the reemergence of the divine feminine, ancient civilizations to angels. She is the founder of Phoenix Fire Mystery School and leader of the global peace initiative called The Way of Truth with students worldwide. If you'd like to learn more about her, go to her website, her name, TrishaMcCannon.com. And with that, I welcome the amazing Tricia McCannon to Dare to Dream. It is so great to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Devin. It's such a pleasure to be with you and see you and your wonderful guest and audience.
Mm-mm-mm. So I want to start with, because of how meaty your beautiful bio is and the work you do, and now you know more about me. We chatted before. What is your shamanic lineage? Can you say more about that and how you were initiated? And let's start there.
Gosh, you know, you were sharing with me some of your history and the Central American and Native American and South American traditions. I also have some training within the Native American twisted hair tradition here in North America, but not in South and Central America. My background is very much sort of, I came into the shamanic path through the goddess tradition, which is the divine feminine. And I talk about this actually in my book, Return of the Divine Sophia, which is, you know, as you said, one of 5 books. And this book is very much about discovering the hidden history of the planet and how for thousands of years there wasn't any war or conflict on the planet because people believed that the creator of all was the Divine Mother. And for me, as a growing up, I had always grew up across from a great forest, and I spent a lot of time in the forest. And I began to see as a child these devas and elementals, and I think most people don't see them. And so they went and told the overlighting angel of that forest. And he came when I was about 8 years old and began to teach me about the great chain of being and how the light and the sound and the vibration is stepped down through the dimensions to, of course, eventually form the world we're living in, the physical world. And so he was one of my first teachers. And then growing up in my, great American dysfunctional family, like so many other people, I wound up doing a lot of praying that someone wiser than myself would show up. And so I began to have this guardian walk by my side. And for the longest time, he would not show me his head. And later, of course, I was to realize that was because it was the head of an eagle, even though the body was the body of a human. And when I was 19, I met a lineage of masters called the Sahaji or Viragi masters. And this is an unbroken lineage of masters that has, they've incarnated in every land of the world, from Persia to the Far East to, Egypt to, England to America and the Americas. I was initiated at the age of 19 in this lineage. And that lineage of masters teaches basically that the three highest principles are love first, sound second, in the beginning was the word, and light third. These are the three purest ways that we can know the divine. And this made perfect sense to me because, of course, now science knows that, there's what they call phonons, which is vibration and sound, and they turn into photons, which is light. And this is, of course, what the mystics and the masters have been saying for thousands of years. And this eventually falls into, let us say, in the higher dimensions, what we would think of as the sacred geometric templates that allow the worlds of form in the third and fourth and fifth dimension to be created. So that was my initial. I'm still very much in that lineage of masters. But then when I was 27, I met my shamanic teacher, and she was trained in the Native American twisted hair tradition and many other traditions, including the goddess traditions. And so I began to be trained in those traditions as well, including the Egyptian traditions. That's a, the Celtic, European, and the Egyptian are very strong. I'm not really trained in the African traditions. That's a whole nother, I know Yemaye and Oshan, but that's a whole nother tradition. There are wisdom keepers in nations and cultures around the world. And I think it's important for us to listen because even though they've created different, let's say, ceremonies or traditions, in the end, all of the streams go into the great river that go into the mighty ocean of love and mercy, which is what the masters call it.
And
And
do
these.
you utilize shamanism today in any of your practices, both either personally or professionally?
As a clairvoyant, I work very much in the Christ energies and the Divine Mother, the Divine Father energies. And I have done probably 6,000 readings or more for people all around the world. But I do a lot of healing work with people. The clairvoyant work I can do over the telephone if I have a photograph of the person or a Zoom call. But the healing work, I actually have to work with them in person. And so when I'm trained in a lot of traditions, and some of the shamanic work would be, for example, using a sage or crystals or pendulum to measure energy fields. And then once you make these shifts with people, you can remeasure the field and see a qualitative difference. In the Native American, they have what are called the seven, the four sisters. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're basically sage, which cleans the field, white sage, sweet grass, which harmonizes and balances the field, cedar, which grounds the field, and tobacco. And this isn't really the tobacco that we smoke in cigarettes that give us cancer in our lungs. Tobacco, when used in a pure form, which I'm not really a smoker, but it can bring the mind to a place of stillness. And that's also, I think, used in the South American traditions as well, who are very versed in, plant medicines like I.
Absolutely. I was thinking that while you were saying that mapacho is often what they'll smoke, and it is cleansing for the person and very grounding. I don't love the smell, but I know it's very powerful.
Yeah, it's interesting. The indigenous people lived very close to nature, and they when you are not distracted by all the things we're distracted by in our modern world, like making a living and traffic and noise and all the things that keep us in a beta state, when we are able to really sink into that deeper state by being in nature, our natural perceptual abilities begin to open. And I think that's what happened for me as a child, spending time in that forest, is I went from my little chatty beta brain into deeper levels of alpha and theta. And in that level, we have far more access to our perceptual abilities. As we know, we only see in a very narrow bandwidth, the visible light spectrum. We've got infrared and X-rays, and we've got ultraviolet. We've got all of these bands, and there are different animals that are able, like dogs, for example. I think they have 100 times the nose smelling ability that we humans have. Some of the amphibious beings, their eyes, and reptilian beings, their eyes move on 180 degrees, and they're able to pick up colors and things that we can't. So, all of us have the potential, I believe, to access our inner gifts. Our clairvoyance, our clairaudience, our clairsentience, our claircognitive ability. But our society isn't really set up so much these days to allow us to drop into that deeper space of inner knowing and heart consciousness and wisdom.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. And I wrote down, I love what you said, love the three pieces of receiving, and the most important are love, sound, and word. And I am curious, in your estimation, Tricia, why is shamanism really important considering how our planet and humanity is right now? What kind of secrets, if you will, knowledge do they hold that could actually help us, aid us in our timeline?
Well, everything that's been created has its own wisdom, its own intelligence. I was talking with somebody just yesterday, one of my clients that came, and they were the fella had gotten prostate cancer, and you don't know him, so I can say that. And he's been on a journey of changing his food diet and natural herbs. And we were talking about mistletoe. Well, to the Celts, they called it all heal. Now, I know that because they called it that mistletoe has some kind of medicinal properties, but I have never heard anybody in the modern world talk about it. And he was talking about the fact that he had uncovered a book about mistletoe and how now that it's being in these alternative, let's say, or natural therapies, it's being used to heal cancer, for example. He's in total remission. So when we ask about the shaman world, what is the shamanic world? It's basically a worldview that instead of being separated, we are all connected. We're all in the web of life. Whether you're a fish or you're a bird or you're an antelope or you're a human. And there is this beautiful dance of life that goes on when we are connected in at that level. And of course, none of this would happen if we weren't living on a beautiful planet. Our planet is a paradise planet where there are planets out there that are rocky and have very little water. We have so much variety of flora and fauna and beauty and sustainability here. But if we're not tuned in to this sort of organic balance, this dance, where the humans are not meant to be the dominators or the rapers or pillagers. We're meant to be one of many intelligent species on this planet and to live with respect and balance, whether it's to the dolphins and the whales or the eagles or the rabbits, or how we treat the land, how we treat the crops, the GMOs. Not, I'm not a fan. The plants are meant to produce their own seeds. There's a cycling, a natural cycle. When we interrupt the cycle, we throw everything out of balance. And it's one of the beautiful things to me about the shamanic teachings, for example, of the twisted hair. They have these wheels that are, the seven directions, east, the sun rises in the east. South, it's kind of the grounding in the south. West, it's kind of the blue black energies of the Western Ocean, and then white, which is the north, which is the snow-capped mountains. Now, different traditions look at the colors differently. In the Native American tradition I was trained in, it's golden in the east because the sun is golden rising. It's a place of new beginnings. In the south, it's red. It's the red lands, the hot lands. It's, and it's where, so the east represents sort of the power of love, the power of the beginning of everything. The south represents the children and the animals. The west represents the secrets and the mysteries, and women, the place of women. It's also the place of power. It's the place of the mystery schools. And the north represents the teachers. It's sort of the great white brotherhood or sisterhoods, those and more evolved beings that periodically come to earth to try to bring the consciousness up. And then, of course, there's the below, there's above, and there's the center. So, depending on the tradition you're working in, if you're working in, let's say, a Wicca tradition, it would be male and female in each department. If you're working in the goddess tradition, it would be the different goddesses like Gaia or Demeter in the south, and Mary, the sweet love goddesses like Mary. And Mary in the sat in the east. Mary Magdalene has been hidden in the west for centuries, 2,000 years. She was just turned into a prostitute, which of course she wasn't at all. And now she's finally moving back into the north because there are people that are beginning to bring her real history forward, which I'm so happy to see. The below, if you choose to use the below, I do use the below, the above, and the center. The below is the tetralogical energies, the fairies. It's the elementals. It's also the dragons, but you have to be very careful when you call those dragons. You only want to call like good dragons because there are some wonderful dragons out there. I love the dragons, but there are also some that are not so good. So I would not do that with unless you're really experienced and you know what you're doing. The above would be the star nations, okay, and it can also be the angelic kingdoms. And then the center is really the heart. It's really, and of course, it depends on your tradition. When I call the center, I would call in the Christ energy. I would call in Spider Woman, who is the center of the grid, who connects everything. I would call in the Lady of the Lake because she, from the, when you enter the energies of the Lady of the Lake, literally, it is a direct portal to the ocean of love and mercy. There, at every dimensional level, there are these sacred lakes. And so you can just go, it's like, you just went around the board, you went right through the center up into the ocean of love and mercy, which is the place before there were the worlds of form. Okay, let us say, Atum or Sukhmad or the divine, the great spirit of all before the worlds of form were even manifested. It's a, it's an amazing place. They call it the plenum in philosophical, languages. But when you call a circle, why would we call a circle? First off, we're honoring all the different kingdoms. We're honoring the plant kingdom, the mineral kingdom, the crystal kingdom, the human kingdom, the flyers, the crawlers, the swimmers, all of them. And that's one of the things I really loved about the Native American tradition that I was trained in is they have wheels for everything. They have wheels for the for the plant kingdom. They have wheels for the mineral kingdom, for the human kingdom, for the cat kingdom, for the dog wolf kingdom. I mean, for the bird kingdoms. I mean, it's just beautiful. And when you look at all of them combined, it's the humans, the crystals, the plants, and the animals. And so we have a place of balance in this circle. And when we think that we have the right to destroy the land, the oceans, the air, the water for greed or profit or, get rich quick or, I mean, we have really lost sight of what's going on here because right now, this is the only planet we have. I mean, you hear all this talk about we're going to Mars. Well, okay, we can go to Mars, but Mars right now would need to be completely terraformed, and we don't even have the technology for it. It's a smaller planet. It lost its atmosphere. It was once like Earth, but when the planet with the asteroid belt blew up, and was destroyed, it was swiped, as you can see that big swipe on the bottom half of it, and then it began to bleed the atmosphere and then the water off. So why are we talking about terraforming Mars when we could just take care of our own planet right now, right here, right now? And many of you may say, well, what can I do? Well, the simplest answer is recycle. Okay, that's the simplest answer is be conscious of recycling. If there's not a recycling program in your county or your city, see what you can do about getting one going. And I know that sounds like very mundane, but it's what we do day to day that
You
builds.
know, I just visited my brother and sister-in-law. I'm going to call this place out, this city in Fleming Island, Florida, that is right near Jacksonville. And I had finished a bottle of water and I said, "Where do I recycle this?" And they looked at me just, forlorn and said, "There is no recycling here." I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Yes, they stopped it because the people of this city voted to stop it. Why? Because they claimed if they started a recycling program, the taxation on us, it was so high and ridiculous that people voted against it." I was beside myself. Like, so they put all this in a landfill? This is 2024. What are you talking about? And there has to be other measures in place. If there are other places like this in the country, dare I say the world, where this is going on, then find a way to make money. I mean, you can repurpose. The people repurpose plastics into clothing, into so many different beautiful items. There's no reason on this planet to not have a recycling program. That should be a rule.
I totally agree. And, we talk about all these wonderful metaphysical concepts, but it also comes down to the practicality of how we're living our lives day to day. What we vote for, do we want to vote for division and hate, or do we want to vote for unity consciousness? Something that's going to uplift the people or something that's going to divide the people. It's the same thing with, exactly what you just said. Okay, maybe it adds a penny of taxation, or maybe we need to look at how we're distributing the current money so that the existing money actually can go further because it's not being used to pay off rich politicians that are getting into sex scandals. Okay. So, maybe we need to put people that are maybe more responsible and really care about the environment and care about the earth because once we pollute the earth to the point of no return, which scientists have been waving the flag about for about 30 years now, then what are we to do? I mean, really, it's
Yes,
not rocket
100%.
science.
I'm so with you. Thank you. And thank you for that beautiful, powerful overview. In the Inca Caro shamanic prophecy, they call this a Pachacuti, that we're living in a Pachacuti, which means a time of change. And it means many changes. One of the many changes is that we are into the rise of the divine feminine, that there will finally be a resurgence, because we all know the divine feminine was here originally, and now she is back, which means within each of us, men, women, there is also a rise within us right now. I know what that means to me, but I'd love to hear from your expert perspective, this reemergence, as you call it in your book, of the divine feminine. What does that mean for us, those of us who are alive right now, both individually and collectively?
Well, what a great question. There are just so many ways to approach this. So I'm just going to jump in. First off, for thousands of years, people did believe that the creator of everything, God, as we would call it, or the goddess, was the divine feminine because they could observe in nature that the only one that ever gave birth was the feminine, whether it was humans or animals. Maybe the earthworm, is androgynous, okay, but pretty much everyone. And so that makes sense. It's logical. It's just like when we say the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Well, wait a minute, that's not right. It's the Father and the Mother that come together that make the child. That's the real Trinity. Okay, but the Mother got relegated to a Holy Ghost. Okay, yeah, she's been ghosted, right, by the patriarchy. So, it's really meant to be the Holy Spirit. That's really more the daughter principle or the Shekinah. So, what happened to the darn mother that's going to give the birth? Okay, the patriarchy just took her out because they were, I guess, scared of her. And that's a shame because there's really nothing to be afraid of. Motherhood, just like fatherhood, is meant to be sacred. And within each one of us, we have a masculine and a feminine side. We have a left and right hemisphere of the brain. We have a logical brain and we have an intuitive brain. We have the mental processes and we have the feelings. If you just have one without the other, we're out of balance. And that's part of what happened to our society is we got locked in war about 4,000 years ago in the age of Aries, and it was more war, war, and more war. And then in the age of Pisces, it became religious wars. The Roman Empire became the Holy Roman Empire and so forth. And so in the name of Jesus, poor Jesus, they murdered 50 million people. I mean, at first they called them heretics, and then from the late 1200s on, after the massacres of the Cathars and then they went after the Templars in the early 1300s, 1307, then they started calling them witches, okay, which were really healers and herbalists. And a lot of these were women that the men, their husbands had been sent to war, their sons were sent to war. And then once all the men were killed, they weren't allowed to own their own homes. So the only place they had to go was either go in with their relatives or go live in the woods. And then, of course, it became the guilty story. Like, they're gathering, wood to stay warm in the woods and berries to eat. And so they became sort of the shadow for the church, and the church didn't want them. So they decided to get rid of them by calling them witches and killing them all and taking the land. Yes, okay. So, we had about 6.5 centuries of the Inquisition. And in fact, the last Inquisition was in the mid 1800s. That was when the last woman was burned at the stake, which is just like, yesterday. It's unbelievable. And of course, if some of the people that are trying to get into power now get into power, it's going to be the same thing. Let me tell you, you don't have control of your body. You're not allowed. This is like that, what was that story? The Handmaiden's Tale. Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to control who I breed you with, and I'm going to control whether or not you have only these kinds of children. I mean, it's just crazy making. So, I want to say a few facts that most people don't know. And I remember I was stunned when I found this out. I remember my shaman teacher told me this, and I was like, what? I didn't learn that in Sunday school. So, what I discovered was in the 1950s, they discovered that all mammals, humans, and every other mammal out there are created biologically female first. I was
Yes,
like, what?
this is true. This is true. Yep.
Existence of the male is because of the release of an additional androgen. So, in other words, biologically, the male is a subset of the female. That's the opposite of what I was told in Sunday school. I was told, hey, Adam's the man, okay?
They took the rib.
So she's going to suffer and be subservient and be, under his, control for the rest of eternity because she's like, subservient. Well, in the first place, men and women, neither one should be subservient. Okay. I'm a great champion of the sacred masculine as well as the divine feminine. We need them both. And I often think of like, okay, if it was a fort and it was just women in control, the doors would be open, everything, they'd be having a wonderful, colorful bazaar with clothes and earrings, and they'd be like, come on in. If it's just the masculine, it's going to be sterile. Everything's going to be precise and ordered, and they're going to shoot anyone that comes close to the fort, even if it's a friend. So we need the masculine and we need the feminine to be partners in balance. We need to use discernment and we need to have a certain amount of structure and order and logic, but we also need our emotions, our heart, our feeling, our compassion for one another.
Yeah, thank you. That is so beautiful, so comprehensive. And I also know it's going to be about us receiving, remembering, coming out of the industrial, active, busy age into way more of the being, meditative, healer age. There's going to be huge changes, and we are in the midst. We have big shoulders that we all chose to be here at this time. And I'm really curious also, Tricia, because your bio mentions that you are a symbologist. And what a great word. And I just want to say for the audience, what is a symbologist? So this is somebody like Tricia, an expert, who studies symbols, and especially those that have been used in ancient religious or secret societies. So I'm wondering, Tricia, in recent years, what's the most incredible symbolic communication or systems of symbols that you have uncovered? And I'd love it if you tell us about it.
Well, let me explain that, before recorded history, what we think of as recorded history, mainstream, there were very advanced civilizations that lived here
Yes.
in the time of Lemuria. And that was one where we had reached much more the kind of shamanic, universal consciousness of connection with the oceans and the weather and the animals and so forth. We were living in a lot more balance in Lemuria. In Atlantis, more of the masculine began to arrive. But again, for a long time, it was in balance. It really was. But of course, Atlantis kind of got a little too big for its britches there towards the very end. It became very militaristic and so forth. And so, and although there was a lot that was great about Atlantis, it's important to say that for thousands of years, education, universities, the use of non-polluting energy, like with crystals and solar power and so forth, we can get out of balance if we don't pay attention in our own life, but also in our societies. So, what happened is because of the misuse of this energy, after the Great Flood, those that survived, that went to Egypt or the Yucatan or South America or the Celtic Isles, there were 10 different exoduses that went to different places. They chose to encode a lot of the hidden information in symbols on purpose, because they didn't want people who were greedy and power hungry to get a hold of this information. For example, in Egypt, and most of the great mystery schools, there were three major levels of initiation. The first level is the divine feminine, the mother-daughter energy. You could say in Greece, it would be Demeter and Persephone. That would be a way of looking at it. In Egypt, it would be Isis and probably Bast. And the second level was, and this was healing, by the way. The first level, you always learn about the plants and the how to heal. You learn to be of service, unconditional service to others. You learn to communicate with the plant kingdom and to be taught by the plant, mineral, and animal kingdom. This is fundamental. So when you talk about shamanism, that's the first level. If you don't have that level, you're acting from mind and ego, not from compassion and service. The second level was the divine father and son. And this is, things like mathematics, sacred geometry, the Pythagorean theories, all of that, the music of the spheres, and music, math, geometry, and architecture are all expressions in different ways, whether space or time or space and time. So, and then the third level brought you into mastery, where the two came together. So in the mysteries, you were only taught the five Platonics, four of the five Platonic solids in the second level. It was not until you reached the final level that they taught you about the dodecahedron. Why? Because the dodecahedron is a shape intrinsic to the creation of the atomic bomb. And they didn't want you to have that knowledge until they knew that you were far enough along in your wisdom and your divine grounding and service. And of course, they developed both sides of the brain. So one side was the knowledge learning systems, da 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 da. The other is out-of-body experiences, where you learn through your own experience, not just in theory, that you are an eternal soul. That this is one of your many lifetimes. This is one chapter in a gigantic book of life that we're all writing. So the question is, what do we do with this chapter? How do we use it? How can we be of service? How can we learn? How can we develop? What are we learning through the travails and difficulties? Is it patience, forgiveness, love, gentleness, teamwork, independence, interdependence? What is it we're learning in any life? And that matters, because even if you don't think of yourself as very advanced, certainly whatever situation you're in is giving you a chance to learn. And when we die and we go and meet that being of light through that long tunnel, some people think it's an angel, some people think it's Jesus, so forth and so on, whatever we project. But one of the hidden teachings is that this is actually our angelic higher self, our angelic twin. And this is a hidden teaching that Jesus knew about and even is known within the Catholic Church. There is an inner order of priests and cardinals who have made, they've had a sacred ceremony to try to marry their angelic twin, which is really them. And the first question that that higher self asks us is, how did we do? And suddenly there's a life review as we download how we did with all of our wonderful things and all of our boo-boos, as they say, all of our mistakes. And of course, people like my friend Danielle Brinkley and myself, I've also died and gone to the other side.
And if I may interject, I recently had Dr. Eben Alexander on the show, and
Wonderful.
he's magnificent, and exactly what you're saying. I'm going to send him this show because this is profound. You're sharing a piece I've never heard before. I have heard about the light, I've heard about a being meeting you, but I've never heard that's an aspect of us, and specifically an angelic aspect of us. Very powerful. And everybody has one of these.
Is who we really are, even though we may be, really turned around or messed up or confused or a drug addict or whatever we are down here. Who we really are these divine aspects of God that, the divine has sent itself down here to experience. And of course, hopefully for us to awaken within the material reality and enlighten matter. That means not to just leave the body, which is always a great experience if you get to go into the higher realms and study with the masters and the temples of golden wisdom. And, we do this in the Way of Truth. And if any of you are interested, you can go to the wayoftruth.com website and check it out yourself. But also to bring that light into ourselves, to awaken the light in matter, to enlighten matter. And this is when you were talking about this age that we're in. And I had a great conversation this morning with a dear friend of mine in California who we were talking. She was like, well, I thought we were past all this division and hardship and politics. And, for the last 30 years, so many of us have been working to bring more consciousness into the world. And I said, look, We're at this place where the old paradigm of control, power, suppression, war, conflict is fighting tooth and nail to stay in control, to keep us in these conflicts, to keep us in this confusion and this doubt and not knowing what's true and not knowing what's not true. All you really have to do to know that is to go into your heart. And if it brings joy, if it brings unity, if it brings kindness, if it brings love, and then it's the right path. If it brings hate, anger, blame, criticism, lack of self-responsibility, then it's the wrong path. It's really pretty darn simple. It's not the mind, it's the heart consciousness.
When you say these ancient civilizations that left behind symbols, are you speaking specifically about petroglyphs, about caves, and things like Graham Hancock has a current new season out on Netflix where he's showing these amazing ancient sites around the world, and he's showing these very things, these symbols, and what they meant. And is that what you're referring to?
Yes, yeah, somewhat. Graham's great, by the way, and also Eben Alexander. I just want to put a hurrah in for him. I remember reading his story when it came out in a magazine, and I got his book. I bought 10 copies and sent him Christmas presents because his story was so beautiful and remarkable and so authentic. He was like, in a place where he was not in balance in his life, and he had this profound near-death experience with encephalitis, and it changed everything. And he had the courage as a brain surgeon to come back and write it. So, I just want to give him a shout out because I think that this is a time that is asking for us to have courage. And I know a lot of people who want to come forward about things in the world, but they're working, let's say, for the government, or they're afraid they're going to lose their job, and how will they support their children and pay their mortgage payment and so forth. So I just want to say it's a time when we are being asked, as they say, the rubber meets the road, where we are being asked what is most important in this time is adding your voice to the greater chorus of voices that want to change the world for the better. So to go back to your question about symbols, Graham is great, and his wife too, lovely photographer. We've been friends on the circuit for a long time. I haven't seen his new series on Gaia, but Hermetics is, let me just give you one instance, the Ankh. Most of you know what the Ankh is. It's a cross with a loop at the top, okay, or Viscopisces. So let's talk about just some of the multiplicity of encoded wisdoms that when you study one of these, it opens up like a hologram and opens up these levels of aha awareness in the higher realms. So the vertical line can represent the earth and the heavens, right? But it can also represent the spine that we raise the kundalini from the base, the life force, up into the medulla oblongata to awaken the pineal gland and the thousand-petal lotus at the top to be able to leave the body and have a transcendent experience. The horizontal line can represent the balance of the left and right hemispheres. And of course, they come together at the third eye here. As just as Jesus said, when you make the two eyes into one, the inner into the outer into the inner, the male into the female into the male, then you shall see the kingdom of heaven. He was telling us right there in the Gospel of Thomas, the spiritual technology to awaken our third eye. But it can also represent in the Native American tradition the good red road, the road that we're on down here in the third dimensional world, trying to figure it all out and remember who we are. So it's this balance between the above and the below, the male and the female, the left and the right, that brings us into the heart center. Now, at the loop is a Viscopisces. The Viscopisces is formed by the merger of two circles. Okay, the divine mother, divine father, male and female, that awakens the third eye. So It also, of course, is the shape of the seed, isn't it? All seeds are that shape. It's the shape of the yoni, the woman's yoni from which new life comes, the shape of the end of a man's phallus where the seed of life comes out. It's a doorway that we enter that when we're coming down from the worlds of spirit is when spirit comes into the worlds of matter to create life. So when Jesus says in the Bible, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man who's of course attached to his material world, he didn't use that phrase carelessly. The eye of the needle is what? It's a vesica pisces. So it represents the awakening of the third eye, which allows us to, that can only happen when we balance our masculine and feminine. So how can we do it? We raise the kundalini, we awaken the third eye, and we're able to leave. You add that, for example, to the caduceus, which is basically, a rod with a ball at the bottom, the life force, a ball at the top, the wings on it, and the indah and the pingala. There's the central nervous system and the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems that go up the caduceus. This is again a symbol that represents the spiritual technology of enlightenment. We fly free from our bodies when we activate our circuitry. Does that all that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just loving this conversation, to be honest with you. Thank you. Of course it does. And it's very powerful information. I actually think this is really, really relevant right now. And here you are, Tricia. You've researched the hidden history of humanity's extraterrestrial origins too, which, I love. Can you share any surprising discoveries about which alien races seeded our DNA and why?
Wow, okay. You just like go right for the juggler there. She's not beating around the bush. So let me just say that all of us are far more complex than we realize we are, not only as souls beyond the worlds of form, but even in the third dimensional world. So let me kind of give a little bit of overview with this. First off, many of you may know that there are different dimensions. Okay, for example, when we die, we're no longer in this dimension unless we're a ghost and hanging around down here. We go into the astral plane. But every one of these dimensions has different layers to it. We can call those layers densities. So our planet for a long time now has been in about 12,000 years, has been in about the third density of the third dimension. But actually, long ago, we were in a higher density in the third dimension. Okay. And so at the time of Lemuria, and Lemuria was primarily seeded by people from Alpha Centauri, Beta Centauri, Proxima Centauri. They look just like us, but they were more unity consciousness people, more telepathic. And they, were wonderful. They were really higher consciousness people, and they worked a lot with they had some interesting rites. A lot of these stone circles that you find around the world, because they have crystals in them and granite, they knew a way to activate them at certain times of the year, usually the solstices or equinoxes, because it has to do with the energy coming from the sun, which is, 97% of the mass in the whole solar system. And they could open an interdimensional portal and allow the initiate, usually between the age of 12 and 16, to go through to the other side so that that initiate would experience a unity consciousness. And then once they had experienced that, and when they came back, they would not want to make war on anybody. They even in competitive races, they weren't going to make that person their enemy because they had experienced that all of us are part of the whole. When we hurt one another, we're really hurting ourselves. Now, maybe we don't know it, but as they say, down to the last, grain of sand, the law of karma, that which we do to others will be done to us. And so maybe not in this life, but in some life, believe me, it will happen. So that's how we learn lessons, by walking in someone else's shoes and gaining compassion. So in long ago, I mean, this galaxy, there's a lot of beings in this galaxy, and the human form is one of the major ones, okay? Some version of us, and with different colors. And for example, in the Lyran system that was seeded about 22 million years ago by some other galaxies, including the Perseus galaxy, the Andromeda galaxy, the Pegasus galaxy, and so forth, they seeded the human genome in the Lyran system. Now, Lyra has 12 suns in that system, but this was a particular star that we call M43, I think. And it was very close to a very important stargate. And there were four major planets in that system. And there were four major strains of humanity in that system. Unfortunately, that system was invaded by a group of reptilians called the Shakar reptilians, very aggressive, very violent, about 88,000 years ago. And it created a big exodus. So that human species went out to many systems, from the Pleiades to Arcturus to the Aquarius, Cancer, Aries, the Sirius system, many, many systems. So depending then on the planet, the energy of the planet and the frequency of light that is striking the person or the life that lives there. Remember, they're young suns that are blue stars, middle life stars like ours that are gold stars, and there are red stars, which are older stars. The frequency of light to some degree determines how the human genome adapts. So we have many colors. We have brown skin people and black skin and green skin, a few green skin, yes, shocking but true. Some blue skin people, like you hear about in the Vedas, some more violet tinted. We're pink skin. I don't know why they call us white, but we're really pink. Who should call us the pink people? Okay. So the white people, maybe there's some real white people out there like albinos, but we're just the pink people. Okay. So you got everything. You got brown eyes, you got blue, you got green, gray, you got everything. So have a very adaptable genome, thank goodness. Okay. But of those four races, there was a race that was about 10 feet tall, someplace between 8 and 12 feet tall, but average about 10 feet. They have red hair and pretty white skin. Those were called the Nori. And they came here a long time ago, like two ice ages ago. And they lived in the Arctic. And later, they're the ones who started the Hyperborean civilization, which we don't know very much about, let's face it. Who knows, they could have even been, the Norse gods. That could have been Anunnaki, or it could have been them. But eventually they moved into Atlantis, and then they dispersed to North America and Central America. And in North America, they became the mound builders. And this is why we found all these skeletons that are, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 feet tall, with red hair and mummies, mummy wrapping. And they had huge pearls. I mean, they had pearls as big as tennis balls. Okay. They found so much stuff. And there's some great books about this that are out there, the giants of North America. And when De Soto and Cortez and all those Spanish conquistadors came over here, they found these tribes of people that were 10, 12, 13 feet tall and were nice. They were really nice people. They weren't making war or anything. They could carry big old boulders, 350 pounds. And then we have, like in South America, you have a group that were called the Ramay, Ramay, the Ramay people. They're about our height, but they have those big old craniums that you see all those skulls down there in South America, that there's wonderful shows on, ancient aliens about the Brian Forster's one of the researchers about this. So they have the skulls like the Anunnaki with the large craniums, but they're only about 5.5 feet tall. They're the ones that brought the Mayan calendar to the natives who live there. They're the Lang people. They're about 2 feet high. They were in the Celtic lands a lot. They're like not the fairies exactly, but the little people. They like shiny things, Lots of shiny things like that shirt you're wearing. It kind of looks shiny to me over here, but definitely they and they're playful music, arts, dance, and they actually are very helpful. They kind of try to rescue people when they've been abducted by those crazy Naboo Grays that have been down here since the 50s, taking people, and now they've kind of been run off the planet mostly. So yay. Some of those abductions are stopping. So there's a lot of people out there. It's a big universe, and but we are, I want to just say, we're in the lower worlds. And as long as we're in the third or fourth or fifth dimension, even, but let's say the third dimension with all of its different layers, because a lot of these groups are at the fifth or sixth or seventh or eighth or ninth or tenth or 11th density. Like the Arcturians are very high. They're up there in the 11th density of the third dimension. So these vibrational densities, the higher you go, you get to the point where the dark forces can't get to you as easily because they can't achieve those states of consciousness and vibration. And so, we are in a shift in the planet right now where the whole planet is moving up vibrationally into the fifth density of the third dimension, which is good. But the forces of darkness that have been running things for a long time behind the planet, a lot of them have been run off the planet, but we still have humans that kind of were going for the greed, power, control, war, conflict dramas. And you want to know who they are. All you have to do is figure out their agenda. If they are into greed, power, war, conflict, and division, they're working for the wrong side. And so that group is, not thrilled that their, let's say, overlord reptilian gray masters have been driven from the solar system. So they are fighting tooth and nail, whether it's the pharmaceutical companies or it's the, gun people who like, let's just sell more guns. Who cares who dies? Okay. It's like, this is not very logical, except if you look at it in terms of greed and power. And so if you can just look at it from that point of view, who is into greed and power at the cost of unity, consciousness, and harmony, then it's not a difficult puzzle to solve. But as long as we are in the lower worlds, we're always going to be dealing with contrast. And this is how the soul learns. Basically, if you only eat hot fudge sundaes for the rest of your life, you don't have any other, choices. You don't learn how it is to not eat good food, or you only eat whatever you consider to be good food, or bad food. You have to have enough contrast to be able to make the shift.
Right. And when you bring up the Dracos and the Lyran Orion wars, I know that particular sect of Dracos decimated first the resources and then the planet and many of the Lyran Lion as well as the Lyranavian people. And just as an overview, because I've always been curious about this, are all Dracos bad, or are there sects of Dracos that you feel are actually very good people? I mean, I always bring it down to there's good lawyers, good singers, bad singers. So what about the Dracos?
Let me say that the Shi'kar reptilians are pretty much horrible. They are violent, and they use humans as, servants, slaves, and fodder. But there are good reptilian species out there. There really are. Long ago, before the reptiles came down, there was a big war where the reptiles tried to take over in Lemuria. So there was a big war at that time, and the Anunnaki helped to fight them off, and the Galactic Federation helped to fight them off, and so forth. So they didn't succeed at that time. And but before that, one of the early teachers for mankind had been the Nagas. The Nagas were like the snake people. You see pictures of them in India. And they were actually wisdom keepers. But then once the Dracos eventually got down here, or the, Shi'kar reptilians, they said, look, you're reptilians like us. They're not going to welcome you, those earth mammals. warmly into their society. So, you better side with us if you know what's good for you. So some of the Nagas, I think, are still on the light side of the force. I've had some contact with them, but a lot of them moved over. This is where you hear about like a third, went to the dark side. They kind of came more into this dimension, or this density level of the dimension, and they've worked with the Shakar reptilians. But there are some good reptilians that are more peaceful on other planets, and all you have to do is kind of look at the reptilian animal species. Little lizards are kind of nice. They're really cute. Those little geckos, those are cute as they can be. And there's others. And then there's and many snakes, like the black snake eats rats. Okay. It's not, there's only like five, I think, poisonous snakes on the planet. But there are some snakes that are just, all about, we've got venom and we're looking for someone to put our little, hooks into.
Yeah, and then there's boa constrictors who will eat a human live. So yes, that's a really good way to put it to look at the animal kingdom because after all, they are reptilian. And so they're, I'm sure, descended at some level from the reptilians. And then I want to ask you, Tricia, about the Anunnaki. So I know for the sake of conversation, I'm going to say we, as in including the audience, we know. 450,000 years ago, the Anunnaki came here. They had a problem on their planet. They came to mine, Africa specifically, went for gold. They didn't want to do the labor, looked at what were humans at that time and said, they could be good labor. Let's mess around with their DNA and switch the strands. They did. We acquiesced. And then we euphemistically ended up not living as long, having physical issues, not being able to bear children, etc. And then to our rescue came five seed races to help us out, the reptilians, the bird people, the avians, the felines, and the high-level light beings of Lyra. So we've got this incredible soup of DNA, which means there's not an S, us and them. I loved how you talked about the we earlier are connected to everything. And indeed, we're actually connected. We are hybrids. We are the extraterrestrials. So I know that Anunnaki group that did what they did, that was a particular sect that made that choice. Not a good choice. We are of free will on this planet. And they were eventually recalled. How also, conversely, how have the Anunnaki been wonderful? What have we benefited from them, through them, in relation to them?
Well, as you know, just like human beings, we have some very masterful, beautiful human beings on this planet, yourself included, and maybe many people in this audience that are listening. And you also have people who would sell their mother and all their children's souls for power and money. Same with the Anunnaki. You have people like Enlil, who really was all about power and control, and he really did not like the humans. He despised them and looked at us as lesser beings, and actually were afraid that we would develop and surpass them as, given enough time and enough mentoring. And then we have people like Enki or Ea, Prince Ea, who was very much an advocate for the human race, wanted to teach us, train us, and see how we could fulfill our potential. And this has been kind of the age-old struggle. And if you really kind of look at these like almost imprints in our psyche, you see it, this struggle between the half brothers, reflected in the Cain and Abel story, in the English and the Irish, in the Jews and the Arabs, in the North and South Koreans. I mean, it's like in the Chinese and the Japanese. I mean, it's just like, you're looking in the mirror and that person's got to be your enemy. Okay. And so, unfortunately, we're still dealing with that today. You can see it in the Middle East so easily. So, to kind of, continue your with your question, the Anunnaki did they They accelerated our evolution genetically, but they also brought us writing, mathematics, architecture, metallurgy, music, medicines, herbs, plants, our understanding of time, our understanding of numbers. I mean, they brought so all the foundational arts and sciences they brought to us. Yeah, did they mess up some? Yeah. Did they, get involved in their own little petty squabbles and wars and ego trips? Yeah. Did they bomb Sodom and Gomorrah and three other cities and make the Fertile Crescent of the Middle East a desert? Yeah. Did they make some mistakes? They did. But really, we're their children. We could have made the same mistakes. We go to another planet, we find a little species that's about 3 feet tall, and we're 6 feet tall, and they live for 20 years, and we live for 80 years, and they think we're God, salami, salami, baloney. Okay. And then there's squabbles that happen, between the astronauts. Okay. We're going to do it this way. No, we're going to do it this way. And so forth. So we're their children. So yeah, we can blame them, but we also need to give them credit for the many gifts that they did bring us. And I think that's real important to be in a state of understanding and forgiveness. And also to, we don't have to worship them. I mean, it's just like it's interesting, when you study the ancient world, which I've spent a lot of time. In a way, we are kind of like their children. And so, first we worship them uncontrollably, I mean, without any question. Then we begin to get rebellious. Think about how the Greeks, were, and, they were scared of them, but they were still going to pull down their statues. And, you think of some of the story of Perseus and the city of Argos and so forth. So then we became rebellious. Then when they left us, we missed them terribly. There's literally letters from priestesses that are like, please come back to the temple, my whole meaningful life. I don't have a meaning anymore. Please come back. So we missed them. Okay. Then we decided we were going to deny their existence. They don't even exist. They are myths and legends. Those stupid, superstitious ancestors of ours made up. They never even existed. We are going to rewrite history, and it's starting 2,000 years ago. That's what's going to happen. Okay, we'll go back 3 more thousand years. Oh, maybe five, but we're not going back very far because then we're going to have to take a look at who set the flood, which was Enlil, by the way. Who wiped out Atlantis? That was Enlil, by the way. Okay, because he didn't like humanity. Let's not tell the humans that they were very evolved in Lemurian Atlantis, because then they'll get too big for their britches and think that they can do it again, and they'll be rivals to us. That's how Enlil thought. That's not how Enki thought, but he wasn't really in charge. So, so now we're at the place of, oh, we had parents? That's an interesting theory. Could you show me some proof of that? Okay, that's the stage we're in now. And so some people are still like, what? No, we got made out of mud and clay. It says so in the Bible. Or others were like, maybe we were beamed down here long ago. I mean, the story we're told is that we are cavemen. We're monkeys, and then we're cavemen swinging out of the jungle, and then poof, civilization, just add water. I mean, it is just not logical.
Oh, that's great. And of course, there is proof. There actually, I mean, scientists now have found genetic proof about our connection to the extraterrestrials. Now, specifically the Anunnaki, I mean, just look at the amazing amount of paintings, of carvings, of petroglyphs that show these godlike tall beings in history, in ancient history. Yes, this exists.
The Muslims are the not the Muslims, but let's say the jihadist Muslims, let's be specific, around blowing up our ancient history, because no, life started not with Jesus, but it started with Muhammad. Okay, so let's just push the timeline even closer. I mean, honestly, people's attachment to religious dogma, I mean, if you can look at the beautiful golden thread and truth behind every spiritual path, the inner teachings, they're quite beautiful. But people who are not enlightened, unfortunately, subscribe to things, and they get so locked into dogma, whether it's Christianity or Muslims or Jewish or really any of those kind of monotheistic religions. Yes, there's one divine consciousness intelligence behind everything, but as they say in the East, there's billions or trillions of expressions of it at every dimensional plane. And when we talk about gods and goddesses, this is not to worship anybody. It is to honor the fact that there are those who have lived longer. Some are wiser, some are not. Some are what I would call, let's say, more enlightened mentors or teachers that we can learn from their example or the wisdom that they embodied. Others are not working for the evolution of the human race. And it's true with humans. It's true with corporations or governments, and it's also true with extraterrestrials. They're ones who have become liberated and they want to liberate their brothers and sisters. That's why you have this radio show. This is why I write the books that I write. This is why I speak at conferences. And I want to mention along this way that the first weekend of February, I'm going to be in San Rafael speaking at a conference called Expand. And it's the first time it's come out of the gate. It's going to have an incredible lineup. And if you want to know about it, you can go to sacredstories.com and check it out. She has a whole incredible stable of authors. And I hope you become one of them, Deb. I think that'd be perfect. And then she's going to come to Atlanta in June.
Ariel, you're talking about, yes? Yes,
Yes.
she's amazing.
Pagedello, she is lovely. I've known her for years, and her whole name, I think, is Patricia Ariel Pagedello. So I call her Patricia, and everyone else calls her Ariel. But that conference is going to be the first weekend in February, and you can go to that website. And you can also go to my website, trishamcannon.com, and sign up for the newsletter. And I'm going to send out an announcement about it so you can, find out more. And then, of course, there's the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles the second weekend. And I'll be there, you'll be there, and a lot of other really wonderful speakers will be there.
Yes, thank you for that overview. So let's pause there. So you're presenting February, and by the way, folks, LA Conscious Life Expo is February 7th through 10th. It is annual. So this is 7th through 10th, 2025. The link to get your tickets, don't miss this. It is the greatest event of our time. And you will get to meet people like Trisha, hear her in person. So the link is in the show notes in the description below. Definitely click there. What are you presenting? What are you speaking about, Trisha, at the LA Conscious Life Expo?
Be speaking about the hidden history of the galaxy. Yes, I know how exciting. You're like, yes, okay. This is definitely one of our wheelhouses. And I think they have me staying over on Monday to do a day or half day intensive. I just got an email from Shima asking me about that. So yeah, I'll be speaking about that.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. That is so perfect. So what Trisha is referring to is that speakers such as herself, headliners, they're going to have a spot, a really yummy big chunk in order to present and be with you guys in a group, one-on-one, but in a group. And then there are only certain people that get asked to do a Monday workshop. So it is Friday through Sunday, but then Monday, even though the vendors go away, what we have is amazing time where we get to go way more in depth with Trisha and the few other people. Not many people stay over to do these workshops. I'm always there on the Mondays because the whole 4 days fills me in a way. I mean, what a beautiful way to start the new year, but it fills me with information. I'm going to be presenting Friday at 5 p.m. So come meet us, join us, come hear us speak, get Trisha's books, right? She'll probably be able to sign them at some point. And again, the tickets are in the show notes. I also want to cover the fact that you've got a free introduction to the mysteries that folks who are watching or listening can download. Tell us about that. That's at trishamcannon.com.
Yes, at my website, for many years, I was teaching a mystery school in person, and I had people from around the country that flew in, and it was about 14 years of my teaching. And then I started getting emails from around the world saying, "Do you have an online class?" And for a long time, I had to say, no, don't. And so eventually, I created 12 really amazing online classes, and they're each like 130 pages with probably 250 images, hermetic images per class. And you can order those on my website. But I developed just a short, by short, maybe I don't know what it is, 40, 50 pages introduction to the mysteries. And so, again, if you go to my website, trishmccannon.com, you can sign up for the newsletter. That's fine. You can also write me an email at trishmccannon speaks. Dot com or Trisha McCannon, how does it go? Trisha McCannon speaks at yahoo.com. You can send an email to that and say, "I'd really like the introduction to the mysteries." And then my assistant Linda will send it over to me and I will personally send it out to you for free. So.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you for that. And Tricia, this is Dare to Dream. What are you next dare to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
Gosh, I so love the name of your show. It's just so beautiful and so inspiring. And as I told you, with the Way of Truth Mystery School, which is the initiatic path that I was trained in from the time I was 19, I've been creating these incredible discourses. So anyone that's interested in checking those out, you can go to thewayoftruth.com. But one of the series was all about dreams, and the one I'm working on now is about the hidden history of the planet. And those are going to be probably my next couple of books. So that's kind of what I'm dreaming now. The series I'm doing now is called The World Dream. And it really explains how the society that we're in now is a result of a lot of conscious and unconscious programs. And, shows like this are about trying to reveal the hidden history that's laid in certain belief systems, some of which are wonderful and some of which do not serve us. Men are superior and women are inferior. That doesn't serve anybody. Doesn't serve women, but it also doesn't serve the men because they have to carry all the weight. How about partnership? That's just one of many. Another is that, remember we're the only inhabited planet in the galaxy, and now it's like the next thing was we're in a backwash planet that no one cares about. And the next thing is, no, actually we were in the center of a whole lot of galactic activity. We're more important than we realize we are, and we need to wake up and to begin to develop these abilities. And so, this is part of why you do your show and why I do what I do is for us to begin to remember our true divine potential, make that connection with the divine and with each other, with the planet, with the world, so that we shift this destructive path that we've been on for so long and, create a song out of our life.
I have really enjoyed this conversation, Tricia. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. I can't wait to meet you, and I'm going to come to your workshop in
Oh,
February. It'll be super fun.
beautiful. It would be my honor, my pleasure, and hopefully they will not have me doing one of my moderations so I can come to yours because I would like nothing more than to continue to receive this exquisite information. I have to say, I was so taken in this conversation thinking, like, how does someone get so lucky like you to be given the breadth of information? It's not just on one narrow path, it's on many paths. Do they converge? Do they weave? Indeed. But you've been gifted with so much information. And how lucky are we to be the recipients of that? Because you're brave enough to come out and talk to it. So thank you for the honor of getting to know you.
You too. And I'm happy to do the show. I know you have so many other wonderful guests to interview because of the Conscious Expo coming up, but maybe we can do it again soon.
I would love that. Yep. And
That's
we will.
much love to you and our audience for sticking with us through this whole time.
Yeah. And folks, I'm going to end the show today with this quote. harness the strength of the ocean and the gentleness of the morning dew. The balance of the divine feminine isn't just in being soft, it's in the powerful waves of change that we create. Subscribe to this number one conversation, Dare to Dream. Leave a comment. Share this with somebody you know will love it. Every time you subscribe and leave a comment, it changes the matrix of the platform this show is on, and people who are hungry for this information then can find it because of you. I have two amazing, frankly, three amazing shows coming up, but I want to tell you right at the top, I changed the shows this week. I've never done this before to honor the election. And so in 2 days live, Vita Kukulhof from Amsterdam, our dear friend who channels Arjun of the Yael people, is coming. Arjun is going to come. I hope you know that is another planet. These are another beings, but they're comprised of us and another extraterrestrial race. They are beautiful, loving, and very wise, and they love us on Earth. And so they are coming to talk to us about what's happening on the planet, about disclosure. I find that a very old-fashioned word, but disclosure, and also what's going on with the American election. And they're going to clear up a lot, share a lot, but this was a very well thought out and conscious choice between myself and Vitica to do this. And so you want to join us live. And if you miss the live, don't worry. My team is aware of how fast to turn this around. So by Saturday, this will be on YouTube and all the other channels so you can catch the replay. Additionally, who's coming up? The unbelievable Suzanne Giesman, can't wait. I love her already. Mystic, medium, also about afterlife connections. And finally, Mike Ricksecker. Mike Ricksecker, unbelievable, this guy, author, researcher, filmmaker. He has been featured on the travel channels, the Alaska Triangle, the History Channel, the Unexplained Ancient Aliens, Gaia TV, and Animal Planet. So you can see that's just some of the many amazing folks coming. Masterclass for you, for me as well. I love you all. And remember everything that Tricia said. Like, there really is an afterlife review. We really do have choice, and we really do create the life individually that we lead, as well as for the collective. Let's be in this together and create something special and very magical. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.